Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Heavy news day today. Derek Jeter announcing that 2014 will be his final season, his final game. In fact, in the regular season, will be at Fenway Park in Boston, where he'll probably get the exact same reception that Mariano Rivera received in his last trip there. A.J. Burnett spurns the Pirates. A one-year, $16 million deal with the Phillies. Really? Much more Olympic disappointment than positives, although a silver and, what, bronze today in snowboarding?
Silver and bronze on for the, Farrington Clark. Yep.
Silver and bronze. Oh, no gold? Okay, kick that out.
I'm sorry. Gold, okay, so gold and bronze. You're correct. I'm sorry. I misspoke.
Yes. So, okay. Let's go to Facebook, and we'll start with this one here. I kind of found this one to be a little funny, but that's okay. It's from Sean Bice. Let's see, what did Sean write? Sean wrote to us on Facebook. Are you equally upset how the Big Ten and other basketball schools have continually shared its NCAA and TV money with Penn State, despite Penn State's, quote, pathetic basketball performances? Please spare me the once-a-decade average appearance of the tournament and their usual one-and-done performances. Trust me, very few people tune in to watch Penn State's men's basketball. Okay, Sean. You are not... Actually, I was extremely detailed, which your commentary is your own personal opinion on Penn State basketball, and I understand, and let's face it, it is very rare. I've only done four NCAA basketball tournaments in my 32 years, so that commentary is spot on. But if you had listened to the commentary carefully enough, I was very specific, Sean, on my numbers dealing with basketball versus football. And so when I'm talking about that part, I said that Penn State has not contributed its weight in basketball. I said it specific in terms of the financial end of it. I talked about the pool contributions, which I think, Sean, you probably never even heard of before, of being 65,000 when it's a top-out game attendance-wise versus 27,000 when it's a bottom-out game, and that Penn State has far more bottom-out games, and we're in a location tonight that has top-out games. Unfortunately, football rules the roost when it comes to the finances of any conference or university. That's why expansion is driven in college by football and not by basketball, and basketball is an innocent bystander in all of this because of the numbers. There is no question that the Indianas, the Michigan States, Michigan, Ohio State, the contributions they make in units from the NCAA tournament have been tremendous and go into the pool. The sellouts that they get, where they could each contribute probably for the most part $65,000 each every Big Ten game into the pool, is certainly far greater than anything Penn State does in basketball. Here's the problem. Penn State also contributes $1 million into the pool every home football game. That's a little bit higher than $65,000. And if you're in the bottom, if you bottom out in the Big Ten, it's $650,000, which others have not contributed. The bowl money comes out to a distribution of $3 to $3.5 million per school when the bowl money comes out. That's the difference, and why I was talking about yesterday, Penn State not being in the bowl pool has not helped, and they've had to run $7 million down. There's no question other schools make greater financial contributions than Penn State does in basketball. The problem is it doesn't have any equal to what football contributes. So I apologize. Sean, you're absolutely correct. Penn State is, I've only done four NCAA tournaments in my career. You are absolutely right about that. Unfortunately, you didn't take the time to listen to the full commentary where I was very exact and very detailed when it came to the numbers involved and why the bowl contribution at $7 million over a two-year span is actually a downer, because Penn State does not get a $7 million contribution from the Big Ten when it comes to basketball pool money. All right, it just doesn't come out that way. So I appreciate the comment. I appreciate your opinion. At the same time, my opinion actually had facts in it. So actually, your opinion had facts in it, too. I mean, because I should be fair to Sean here. He said that very few people tune in to watch Penn State men's basketball. Probably true, but the Big Ten Network certainly has helped get the word out there. And then the spare me the once in a decade, whatever. You know, I understand your bitterness, but when I'm talking about finances and I'm talking about numbers and bowl contributions, the basketball numbers don't equal the football numbers, okay? It's really not in the same plane. It's not in the same boat. And that's why it's a big difference. It would be far less painful on Penn State financially if they said, you're not going to get your basketball money from the NCAA tournament on the unit distribution as opposed to bowl distribution. You just get a lot more money from it. It's just a fact of life. That's why I steer you to the Department of Education website on revenues versus expenses. Take a little bit of a look at that and then realize what the football numbers are in terms of profitability in the Big Ten for each school and the profitability of each school in basketball in the Big Ten. You'll notice it's about a 3-to-4-to-1 ratio in terms of top-out numbers. That's why the bowl thing is so tough for Penn State to handle, because that's the bigger number, far greater than the number that's distributed from the NCAA basketball tournament from the pool. Your commentary is correct in terms of where basketball for Penn State fits in terms of their contribution to the conference. It is off base in terms of the percentage by which it would help or hurt Penn State. The football number is a huge number. Thus, Penn State going to bowl games has made huge contributions to the postseason pool that has been distributed by the Big Ten as opposed to what's happened in basketball. Okay. Sorry, Sean. All right. Derek Jeter retiring. Jeter, gone. After this year, he says he knows it's time. Good for him. I'm glad he knows it's time. I mean, it's a lot of guys don't know when it's time. I'm glad he's going to give it one more shot, especially last year was just lousy for him. You know, he's a guy who has rarely been out of the lineup. Last year was awful for him. Now he's going to give it one more shot, see if he can just put one more good season in. He also is on a team that should contend. You know, based on signing Jacoby Ellsbury, getting Tanaka, signing him. I mean, the Yankees have made moves, and they will probably be better because Alex Rodriguez is not a part of the mix. That will be addition by subtraction. A.J. Burnett, for Pirate fans, this has to be an absolute kick in the backside. Because I think they were really counting on him coming back. I mean, the one thing the Phillies will get out of him is that every fifth day they will get, for the most part, a tough, hard-nosed outing from him. They will get a tough, hard-nosed outing from him every fifth day. I know the playoff game he pitched was lousy, but he actually made a couple really big-time starts down the stretch for the Pirates that helped get them in to that position. And Cole Hamels will not be starting opening day.
I think that makes
Which is okay.
Yeah, I think that makes the Burnett signing even bigger right now for the Phillies, knowing that Cole Hamels will not get to the start of the season and may not be ready for a couple of weeks after the start even.
If it were a couple of months, I would agree with your statement. But if it's just 2 weeks, it's no big deal.
Well, I think the Phillies needed to do something in their pitching rotation anyway.
Yeah.
It's $16 million though for 1 year. I mean, that seemed like a lot to me. Is that am I looking at this wrong?
Yeah, I agree with you completely on that.
I mean, I guess if you look at it from the Philly standpoint, they needed somebody. There's not that many somebodies available. This is going to put them pretty much right at the cap, right at the luxury tax limit of what, just under, what is it, just under 190, 190 million, something like that.
Right.
But, right. And if it becomes a bust, what are you out? You're out $16 million, but you don't have to worry about another 2 or 3 years on the contract.
Right. I agree with you in terms of the money. I thought when you told me $16 million, I thought, well, it has to be for 2 years.
No.
It's for 1 year. 1 year. And the Pirates, I can guarantee you, in no uncertain terms, were not going to pay him $16 million. Just weren't going to do it for 1 year. Now, with the Pirates, they have to figure out a way to plug that gap, because you're talking about a guy that took the ball every fifth day for them for the last 2 years. And he also was also the Yoda of that staff. He's the guy that they went to and they talked to for advice and so forth, and he made the staff better just by his mere presence on the team. He not only pitched well, but he also really tutored and brought along younger pitchers. Now, 2 weeks, okay? Now, if Hamels is out 2 months, then I can see what you're talking about. Yeah, I could see, okay, he'll fill that gap for a while. But if he's out 2 weeks, yeah, discomfort in pitching arm during off season.
Well, they qualified it as tendonitis in the left bicep. And they also the report came out saying he is expected to be pitching in April. Now, I'm not quite sure. He says he can see himself pitching in April. I'm not sure if that means he'll be ready to throw off the mound in April in the bullpen, or if he'll be able to take the mound on the field in April.
Right.
So I think that's a little gray there.
That's the case. Yeah, so I mean, this is more than just a two-week thing. You know, but again, this goes back to why. I mean, you take a risk with anybody's contract. I understand that. I don't care whether it's a coach or a player. You take a risk in the contract. And one of the reasons I've always talked about, and I would lose a lot of free agents because of this policy, okay? Because everyone is looking for long-term security. So that I understand. I mean, you and I would love to have a 10-year contract to do this show, all right?
But and I'm willing to sign it tomorrow.
Right. I understand. No, but I'm saying, though, but that's that kind of long-term security I think everybody looks at. So when a player like Robinson Cano is offered a 10-year deal like that, where it's all guaranteed, can you blame him for going to Seattle? I can't blame him. But I would not sign a pitcher for more than 3 years. I just wouldn't, because I just don't see the return on the investment. He is now going into year two of his contract out of what? He has a 6-year deal?
I don't know. It's so many years I can't count.
I think it's 6 years.
I think it is too, yeah.
And he's out.
Makes 1 year $16 million not look too bad.
Right. No, I understand that. But you see what I'm saying? It's like, I mean, sure, maybe he's back and he pitches May through September. Maybe this is a recurring thing. It's one of the problems with this. It's why I would never go more than 3 years with a pitcher, and I would never go more than 5 years with a position player. Never. The Red Sox signed Dustin Pedroia for 8 years. I think Dustin Pedroia is a marvelous player who hustles and guts it out all the time. I mean, great example for young players as to how he plays the game. But I never would have given him 8 years.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Today's show, of course, from the Sunbury Motor Studio Mobile. Penn State, Indiana tonight here in Bloomington at 7. We have Shikellamy basketball tonight, and also on the web, Shikellamy wrestling tonight. Derek Jeter announcing his retirement. Last game at Yankee Stadium, they're already seeing a surge in tickets for it. And his last regular season game overall will be at Fenway Park because the Yankees closed the season at Boston this year. So he'll be honored everywhere he goes. He is one of the signature players of his era. And has generated, to his credit, literally no controversy in his career at all. Zero.
Wouldn't say that about a teammate of his, but that's something different.
Yeah, you know what? But part of that is security. You know, Derek Jeter gives you the impression he's very secure in himself, who he is, what he does, how he goes about it, the professionalism, and so forth. Alex Rodriguez is an unbelievably talented player, but he's obviously a very insecure individual. That's why he went with the steroids. That's why he's played some of these games that he has played legally and so forth over the past few years. It's just, I mean, he has so much talent, he didn't need to do any of this stuff. And he had so much talent, you would think he'd be so secure in himself. And he's just... You can just tell from the outside looking in, he's a very insecure guy. Derek Jeter, on the other hand, from the outside looking in, just gives all the appearances of being an extremely secure guy in everything he does.
I don't think I've ever heard anybody that wasn't a Yankees fan that said, "Oh, I can't stand Derek Jeter."
No, absolutely not. Look, everybody knows I grew up as a diehard Red Sox fan and so forth. Look, for goodness sakes, like Rivera. You know, he's not good, he's great. Well, it's as simple as that. You don't sit there and look at the other guy. I mean, it's one of the reasons why fans can never grasp this for whatever reason, right? For example, when you beat another team, they stink. You probably use a different word. They stink. Okay, well, if they stink or Jeter stinks, then how good was your victory? Isn't it better that you beat a great team and that you're better?
Steve, I got Roger from Sealands Grove on the line for you.
Hi, Roger. How are you today?
Well, good, Steve. Does there come a time when the Phillies maybe have to take a look at their training staff when you look at the recent history in the last 4 or 5 years of guys not being ready to play on opening day? And it's not just that they're not ready to play, but it seems to sneak up on the Phillies. Now, who knows? Maybe the Phillies had an inkling since October that there were issues with Cole Hamels' biceps, but it seems to sneak up on them. They didn't seem aware of Chase Utley not being ready for the season. I think it was 2 years ago. They certainly seemed to be counting on Roy Halladay last year. And Chase Utley, it's not like he's coming off a Tommy John surgery or he ended last year on an injury like Ryan Howard did. He's had 6 months to get his arm to where it should be, and he's a relatively young guy. So is there a point when there's a difference between the quality of our training staff versus their training staff?
I think it's something that needs to be explored, because there's one part of that statement that I thought that you made was very important. Maybe they had an inkling about it. Well, if they had an inkling about it, then they should have put him on a program so he was ready for spring training. And whatever program that they're doing with these guys for the off season, which they are employed this club between March 1st and September 30th, they're employed by the club all around. And so they need to do a job with off-season regimen to make sure that anything possible to make them ready for opening day, they can do. And the Phillies have acted as an organization between Utley, Halladay, now Hamels, in part I think Ryan Howard, where it seems like they're behind all the time with key guys, where you would think that the whatever regimen they're on puts them in line, unless it's obviously a debilitating injury, which for Howard it was. I mean, an Achilles for a big man like that is a debilitating injury. still would put them on track to be ready for the start of the season. Because one of the great misnomers to me in baseball, Roger, and I don't know about you, is that everyone thinks, well, after July 4th, that's when the season kicks in. The vast majority of pennants are teams that get off great starts, get to the lead, and then maintain the lead the rest of the season. That means April and May are critical, and the Phillies have not been fully stocked in April and May.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, here was the big thing. He knew that he was feeling well in October, he says. Then mid to late November, I think he was quoted as saying, found a kink in the system. And then he started weightlifting and exercising, he said, too fast, too soon. So somebody, whether it's Hamels or Hamels and the training staff, knew about this in November. Or should have.
Mm-hmm. And they all have personal trainers. Somebody somewhere drops the ball on something like this. And it's also a responsibility of the player to let the club know exactly what is wrong and then how to handle it. Now, when did Hamels let them know? That's an important part, too, because the player has to communicate injuries. The trainers I've talked to tell me all the time that communication is critical, and every athlete, they have to judge whether the athlete needs to be held back because they're a bulldog, or needs to be kicked in the backside because they won't do the work. Sounds like Hamel tried to do work too soon, you know, and that's the issue.
Well, you would hope the Phillies knew, and if the Phillies did know, it's almost, I think, inexcusable for Ruben Amaro to wait this long to lock up an A.J. Burnett, because that's one of the reasons that they're paying A.J. Burnett at least $16 million is because they waited till the 11th hour. And meanwhile, the Nationals are out making trades for Doug Fister, who's what? How many years younger than A.J. Burnett? And how many dollars cheaper?
Yeah, a lot more.
Yeah.
A lot more. So, you're absolutely right. I mean, they're making long-term moves, and the Phillies are over there trying to put their finger in the dike.
Absolutely.
But this is the same team that also wants to trade away Dominic Brown if they have an opportunity. So I don't understand, is it a now thing or is it a later thing? What's the direction of this baseball team?
They don't want to trade away Dominic Brown. Does Steve and I have to go back there and re-explain that to you again?
No, I'm just saying, I'm looking at what Ruben Amaro has to say. Why would you make a statement like that then? I mean, why would Ruben Amaro make a statement like that?
I don't think he wanted to trade Dominic
out there.
Brown. Yeah,
no.
Everybody's
got a
price.
He doesn't want to trade Dominic Brown, but you float it out there to see if suddenly somebody comes to you with an offer, and you go, that is going to make our club better, let's do it. That's all he was doing. He was just playing a little game in the open to see if anybody would take some bait and really overpay for him.
Yeah.
It was a dumb idea.
Yeah. Well, hey, I didn't need to take away from your Olympics fans for attempting.
Thanks.
Yep, don't want to do that. Another banner day.
Well, it wasn't snowboard anyway, at least.
Women's hockey, nothing.
You're a hockey guy.
Okay, I'll get to one thing. I'll get to that in a second.
All right.
The A.J. Burnett thing, you were absolutely right at the beginning, and I think Roger's absolutely right. You pay $16 million because you wait to the 11th hour and go, uh-oh, we have trouble. Obviously, by signing Burnett, maybe that is an indication that they're worried he's out the first 2 months, because the reason being, how often do you see teams hit Memorial Day with the lead and maintain the lead? Starts in baseball, for years it was like, oh, yeah, you get past the 4th of July, and okay, you know, and that's when the race really heats up. No, when you really look at the history of baseball, normally the team that jumps out, and by May 31st or the Memorial Day weekend, they're sitting there at or near the top. They're at or near the top for most of the rest of the way, with the exception of the recent history, and with all due respect to the Cleveland Indians, because they've had great starts the last couple of years, and then they have faded badly. Most teams, though, that do really well up to Memorial Day finish out. The Red Sox, coming off their worst season in decades, winning just 69 games, got off to a tremendous start last year. That's how they ended up fueling a world championship. Now you want to talk about the Olympics?
Well, I have a question for you. You're a hockey guy, so you're going to have to explain this to me.
Yeah.
The American goalie Vetter makes a stop. The whistle blows. It is completely and totally audible. You can hear it on the broadcast. And the puck skates through and goes in the net. They call it a goal. They go in to discuss the call into a replay, which I understand you can't do anyway. You can't replay a whistle. Or you can't review a whistle. And nothing happened. Right. Why go to review it anyway? I don't understand what they were reviewing in that particular situation. And if the whistle blew, how does the goal count?
They probably were reviewing just to make sure the puck crossed the line.
Really?
Come on.
I could see that at full speed even. And I'm not a hockey guy.
You asked. Okay, you asked the question. I answer the question.
Well, and the other side of it is I have to ask, somebody blew the whistle. Now, whoever blew the whistle would know that that puck didn't cross the line, or that puck wasn't across the line when they blew the whistle. Otherwise, they wouldn't have blown the whistle. So how does the goal count if the whistle blew?
Well, it's not supposed to, technically. I mean, when the was the sight of the referee blows the whistle, and that has to kill the play right there. So, yeah, it ends up being a controversial goal, but it's not the gold medal game. These two play once again. What I saw on display today was that on an Olympic level, the speed with which the women are playing the game of hockey is even greater than it was 4 years ago. That was a really well-played hockey game. Matt Shepard, who will be working with me, Matt will be the lead guy. He'll be the play-by-play guy on Big Ten Hockey on Friday night. We were talking on a conference call this morning about how well-played that game was today. Really well-played between the two, the checking and everything else. That was an impressive display of hockey by the women. And for the women's game, that was a big boost.
And by the way, even though they scored three times, Vetter did save 30 of 33, which I thought was pretty darn good.
Yes, she did.
And there were some really good shots being shot at her, too.
Absolutely. No, again, this was a really well-played high-level game. And in all likelihood, they're going to meet again in the gold medal game.
No, no question. The only thing this does is this makes Canada basically the top seed in the knockout round.
Sure, that's fine. You know, and they will have earned it because they won. That's okay. That's fine. People in the station love your Olympic passion, don't they?
Love would be the key word there. Yeah.
Then it's time to take a break. All right. Coming up tonight, Shikellamy basketball. Game's on for tonight. There's no problem with weather tonight. And also on the website, wrestling tonight. Steve Williams will have that for you on the web this evening. So you'll be able to follow both teams this evening on radio and on web this evening. There's no issue whatsoever with weather around our area. That will happen tomorrow. In fact, Dr. Girardi's flight to Philadelphia, he got off the plane and his phone was ringing. It was U.S. Air telling him that his flight for Thursday already has been canceled. Nothing like that feeling. Fortunately, we have a backup plan.
Yeah, isn't that jumping the gun a little bit, though? I mean, some people will call it planning ahead. There's a fine line between planning ahead and panic.
You know what, though? How often do we say when something bad happens, well, why didn't they do something about it ahead of time?
That's true.
Now they do something about it ahead of time, and you're like, oh, isn't that panicking?
There is
why
one.
Why do you think they call off schools now?
Oh, I know. It's all about liability now.
Ahead of time. Yeah, sure it is.
There is one change, though.
Let's take a break.
Well, real quick, I wanted to jump in with one change in the sports schedule, Steve. That is Bucknell Navy will be getting underway at 5:30 on Eagle 107, 6 o'clock tip-off. And they are trying to get that in before the snow gets too bad there in the D.C. area in Annapolis. So, again, about a half hour early start there, 5:30 airtime, Eagle 107, and a tip-off at 6.
Dave Paulson, Ed DeChellis, two friends head-to-head in that one. We'll come back with more here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
How many presidents do you want to save?
Save more than you ever thought
at Sunbury Motors Ford during their President's Day sales event.
Choose from over 400
new Fords with savings up to
$10,200.
With interest rates as low as 0% for up to 72 months and no payments for 90 days. Select from over 20 new 2014 Ford Focuses for as low as $16,390. SMC has 17 of the hottest selling 2014 Ford Fusions starting at $18,980. If you're having trouble getting through the snow, Sunbury Motors has new 2014 Ford Escapes priced under $20,000.
If a new truck is on your list,
pick from the largest selection of new F-150s in all of Central Pennsylvania. A whopping 100 at one location, priced from just $23,953. Sunbury Motors President's Day sales event is the area's first huge sale of the year, and the one you won't want to miss. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Head up sunburymotors.com.
Proudly serving the Susquehanna Valley for almost a century.
And now from the International Broadcast Center, filling in for Bob Costas, here Steve Jones.
Looking forward to tonight. Matt Lauer fills in again tonight for Bob Costas. The problem that Bob Costas has right now is that, unfortunately, he has something that takes 2 weeks to get over. I don't know how much he's going to be able to work because he has a sensitivity to light. Well, guess what is all over the studio?
I'm going to say lights.
I mean, anybody that's ever done TV, it's overlit to the extreme. So, you know, he has a sensitivity to light. His eyes are watering like crazy, which means if he's looking at a teleprompter, he can't see it. And it's just, I feel awful for him. The reason I feel awful for him is, you know what? I know people may say, well, you know, Bob Costas, look at all the big events he's done and so forth in his lifetime. And, you know, it's, you know, he'll have other chances. You know what? That's not how the person in the position looks at things in life. I mean, do you think I'm sitting there looking around tonight and not appreciating the fact that I'm doing this game tonight? Of course I am. Always, you know, you always have an appreciation for what you're doing in the moment. And, you know, and that's something that people don't understand, is that each individual within themselves gets to something and they look forward to it, and in the moment they can't wait to do that particular job. He knows, and he's the first one, and I've talked to him personally before about this, about how lucky he feels he's been in his life to do what he does and the events that he does. Just like I look at what I do in my life, and I feel like I've been extremely lucky to do what I do. All right, does Penn State football and basketball, I mean, do they win often enough and so forth? And we know the basketball trip has been this big up-and-down thing for 32 years, but I wouldn't trade a day of it. Wouldn't trade a day of it, right? There's 70 people in the entire country that do BCS Division I basketball, okay? So, yeah, I'm going to go tonight. I cherish the opportunity tonight. For him, from his point of view, he's worked up and done hours and hours of research, and for him to step aside and not do it is still going to be crushing for him. It's not a question of like, well, I've done all these, let Matt Lauer do it. He knows he physically can't do it.
Do you know that ends a streak? That ends a streak of 157 consecutive Olympic broadcasts.
Right, and it's incredible. And not only that, but I mean, when you've watched him on TV during this, I mean, his eyes have been certainly a distraction, but he has been as smooth and as hardworking as ever. And when you have to put in the hours of research about the volume of athletes that he has to put research in on, and then to be sidelined and sit in a hotel, that's an awfully frustrating thing, regardless of how much money he makes per year. Because I think what happens is people say, oh, well, he makes a ton of money. Oh, he's done a lot of things. You have personal pride in what your performance is. Okay? What motivates you is not a person telling you you're great. What motivates you is the satisfaction when the broadcast is over with that you did your best job.
And coming up in the next half hour, we could chat a little bit about snowboarding, and Steve will one-up Bob Costas by doing two shots of vodka on the broadcast, not just one.
Anyway. I don't think so. I've never had one in my life.
Well, now we're breaking new ground. I'm not sure that's a good thing.
No, I think everybody knows that I never have.